So I've actually attended some, client weddings, which I think has been really humbling because you show up there and then everyone introduces you like, "Arey, meet the person who made this happen, guys." And then you become a little celebrity, where all the mummies will rush up to you. They're like, "Beta, can I have your card?"
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Behind the Shadi. My name is Vishal Raskina. Now today's episode, if you listen to it really, really closely, you could just possibly find a life partner. Now, you have to listen to this really, really closely because I've been obsessed with Indian matchmaking and I'm still trying to decide whether I am an Aparna or a Nadia or am I a Vyasar. I'm in too many minds right now. But I wanted to get closer to this entire business of matchmaking. So I said, let's call a set of matchmakers and see how it's done. Now, the idea was to get a non-traditional matchmaker to kind of come and put in their perspective, and you have to listen to them because they're really, really cool about the work that they do. More importantly, there were a few things that were said on the show that I didn't quite agree with, and I had a conversation with quite a few people about this, and a lot of people don't agree to it. So I said, let's bring in someone with a very modern take on Indian matchmaking, and also to tell you more about the business of how they conduct their matchmaking. On this show today, we have Nimit, who's come up with such a beautiful song. It's called Alhada, and the first time I heard it, it's been ringing in my mind ever since. You're going to hear that midway through the episode, so make sure to check out that. Make sure to follow him. Now, it's time for the episode. We have Sunil and Naina Hiranandani from Sirf Coffee right here on Behind the Shadi.
But before we proceed, I must mention that owing to the pandemic, this episode was recorded over a phone call, so please bear with the quality.
All right, so for everybody listening out there, it's been a very, very interesting set of weeks because, I happened to come across this show called Indian Matchmaking. And I think for me, this show kind of showed me a whole different side, because for me, I thought I was this big thing in the wedding industry, which I'm clearly not. And on top of that, I did not even know that there is an industry like matchmaking. So, I mean, I don't know if it's my ignorance or I don't know what, but then I got into this and I got into the specifics and I found these interesting people, and everyone's got this whole Seema aunty fever, but I said we have to get a whole different perspective, and I found them through Instagram and they're so nice to talk to. We've had this conversation earlier and I'm so glad they're with us here. They're from Sirf Coffee. I'm going to get into why they're called Sirf Coffee, but more importantly, we have Naina and Sunil. Hi guys, how's it going?
Hi Vishal, good to be here.
Hey Vishal, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Wow, Sunil's like super formal. Bro, you need to calm down. Like, you need to chill out. I think you've been doing too many Instagram lives recently to be doing this.
Yeah, well, there's been, as you alluded to earlier, it's there's been a little bit of a burst of interest in recent weeks for sound bites and interviews and stuff like that. So, you're right. I think I'll mellow out a little bit for this one.
It's okay. Sunil, you need to breathe. And we're going to, I have to ask you firstly, because I'll tell you what, I saw a mention of Sirf Coffee through Tina Tharwani's Instagram profile. Shout out to Tina. And I was like, okay, this, why are they called Sirf Coffee? Then I went into it and I saw, okay, these guys are matchmaking. And I'm a huge coffee fan. I went with the idea that I'm constantly on the lookout for new roasteries. And I found Sirf Coffee, which is a bespoke matchmaking site. And you're not even a site. You're an entire agency. Can you please tell me why you called Sirf Coffee?
Sure. So the whole idea was that a lot of the matchmaking or dating sites, or I really don't want to be classified as a matrimonial site, are kind of very heavily loaded. Like, using Shadi.com or Bharat Matrimony, it's very emotionally loaded, right? So if you're on Shadi, you're out for Shadi. And it for the sort of target clientele that I wanted to attract, yes, no doubt a wedding or marriage or shadi is the eventual outcome, but it's not the day one objective. So I decided to backtrack what it, you know, precedes shadi. It's like the courtship, the dating, and often a first date is coffee. And the idea of surf coffee, it's that it's just coffee. It's surf coffee. There's no pressure to move forward if you don't want to, and you can move on to your next match. So that's how the name came about.
You know, I'm kind of disappointed, but really happy also because, you know, I came in, I'm disappointed of not getting coffee, but I think a potential life partner is a great incentive. But,
yeah, that's buy one, get one free, right? So there you go.
but tell us, Naina and Sunil, you know, tell us, where did you come from? Where are you guys from? What's the story? What was the early days like of Sirf Coffee and even before that?
Sure. And then I think I'll start and then you can jump right in whenever you want. Sure. So Sirf Coffee sort of started, I'll just start with us, right? We both, we're Sindhis. We grew up in Thailand. Probably.
One second. I have to tell you one thing. Sindhis are everywhere. I love them, but they are everywhere.
We're everywhere. We're like coronavirus. And we just sort of take over, right? And impact the economy straight away.
Yeah.
So we both grew up in Thailand. We're both sort of products of American cultural exports vis-a-vis an international school education. So I've always sounded like this, despite not having been to the States till I was 18 years old. And through, you know, after university, after a series of work postings around the world, from Los Angeles to London, I decided to take a stint out in Bombay. I still call it Bombay. You'll have to forgive me. And when I got on the ground here, I found that the dating scene in India had taken a huge, this is back in 2007, 2008. So there was a huge quantum leap to the country I used to visit over the summers with my grandparents. But having being on the ground here and working in corporate India was a completely different experience. And it was a really pleasant experience. It had taken leaps and bounds in terms of the professionalism, the opportunities, even salaries. You know, it was all of a sudden comparable to the West. But wasn't so comparable was the social scene. You know, there were these very divergent extremes that I found, sort of boozy brunches that were sort of promiscuous and rooftop parties, or this kind of being introduced through parents and family members on a very conservative basis. You can meet this girl just three times before you have to decide if you want to marry her. And there was nothing in between, right? So I went online to see, you know, what the tech world offered us. And there was shadi.com, Bharat Matrimony, and all that. And again, as I alluded to earlier, they were pretty emotionally loaded words. So Sirf Coffee came about probably for two reasons. One, there was a huge gap in the marketplace between these really casual venues and a very kind of conservative, emotionally loaded approach to getting married. And two, my own parents, as I moved back to India, I was 25, 26, they started badgering me about settling down. And I wasn't against the premise. I thought it was a good idea. The arranged prospect of arranged marriage is decent. It's just I wasn't so sure about getting married straight away. So some have accused me of building Sirf Coffee for personal need so I can take my pick from eligible women around the world. But underneath it all, I think it has been what we have found is a very credible and relevant business model.
Fantastic. Naina, I think you've gone completely silent. Or you're too tired of Instagram lives because Sirf Coffee is just loaded with so many interviews.
That's true, Vishal. We've been swamped. So I'll just give you a sort of quick idea into the background. Sunil's already mentioned how we grew up and sort of what we were exposed to. So I've always enjoyed an interest and background in journalism and media. That's what I studied. I graduated. I started, you know, interning with papers like the Indian Express. Also tried my stint at PR and figured out that, you know, buttering up to people is clearly not my forte. So I definitely can't do any kind of client servicing, but enjoyed a very, very positive stint. Worked, you know, I was with the Ogan Group for about 5 years, which also publishes Elle and Elle Decor. in India. So it's great, you know, and then coupled with sort of teaching, I studied literature. I've always been a sort of very people-focused person, right? Because that's what you do as a writer. Whether you're writing about culture or food or travel, it's you know, your senses are kind of always looking for, you know, what makes this different? You know, have I been here before? What kind of stands out? And I think the idea of surfing, I mean, I was aware that it was being conceptualized, but I think, 2013, I sort of made the switch when Sunil's like, hey, why don't we do this together? And it's been great because you have to, to even relatively succeed as a matchmaker or someone who works in this line of work, really need to be passionate about people, right? Correct. And not just me, but I think the entire team is. Like, they're really fascinated by the stories, just like you are, right? Like, we're talking about your journey, my journey, and that's what sort of makes people. And it's been something we've learned on the go. So, you know, no psychologists or like Dr. Phil's on working on Surf Coffee, but I think that's what really sort of attracts people, is that there is a person listening and they actually care about you.
So I'm going to give you like a small scenario, right? Because this is the background I come from, you know, where I think no parent, you know, when a kid is small, will kind of tell them that, oh, you should grow up and be a matchmaker. Right. So you've kind of created an entire career out of something like this, which is very, very interesting. So I want to know, what was like the early days like, especially when you just started off, you know, and was there stigma attached to it? And how did you manage to overcome? Because this is a very trust, you know, it's a business based on trust. So how do you kind of how did you kind of, you know, go through all of that?
Sure. So, Vishal, I do think the early days were tough, right? It was just a different concept. People kind of didn't get it. They were still nervous also about the idea of applying through a website, right? So 10 years ago, you know, people would not get online for anything. They think you'd get scammed or your data would be leaked. And then we're living in a time today where you order, you know, sanitizers online, right? Everything sort of, that was a big part of it. The matchmaking as well, there was a stigma attached to, you know, how do you know you're good at this, right? What sort of makes you a good matchmaker or qualified to do this? And having said all of this, I think we were incredibly lucky as well. I think we were just, you know, passionate people who decided to do this, put the idea out there. I remember our very first client was a 40-year-old MD of a bank, you know, and wow. I mean, he could have very well said, well, you're half my age and I don't know if you're doing what you're doing is right, but, you know, let's give this a shot. So I think it was really meeting really great people who said, you know, there's nothing to lose. Why don't you, you know, if you think you can pull this off, I'd be the happiest client in the world. And now, of course, generating so much interest to a point where, I mean, I feel humbled when one of these big business schools in India write to us and say, hey, can we do campus placements with you? You know, our students would love to work at a place like Surf Coffee. So it's been a lot of on the go learning because, you know, like you said, you don't go to school thinking you will become a matchmaker. And, you know, some people are really good at it and some people aren't, right?
Correct.
And that's absolutely fine. But it's been quite a journey. And so the kind of folks we even have working with us as of today, they do come from an ex-corporate background. Someone's come from hospitality. Someone could have worked in media or film or production. And it's so interesting. At the end of the day, what really binds us together is our understanding of people, right? And emotional intelligence.
I have a question to ask both of you. And it's a really dumb question. It just came to me right now. Do you think in the future you would kind of spearhead a degree of matchmaking, like bachelor's of matchmaking? What do you think of the idea?
It's a tough one, right? Because there aren't any, it's a lot of it's learning on the job. So it's really, I think comes down to a few things. Number one, establishing trust and rapport. And it's not something that you can study. It's, you have to be able to quickly connect to a very, very diverse level of stakeholders, you know, across the world and different ages. So you're spanning maybe 25 years. If I take our youngest client was around 25, 26, to our older clients who are hitting, you know, say 55, 60, Yeah, so you're spanning 35 years, and you have different pockets of people, right? You have someone born and raised in South Bombay, you have others who've moved all around the world, or someone who's born and raised in, I don't know, Colorado. Mm. And although we are all sort of united by an Indian origin, your outlook on life and the way you approach life and even the accent that you hear is going to be very, very different. So it's that establishing that rapport and trust, I think it's not something you can probably study. It comes with time. Then there's this sort of the other aspect of it, there's the balance of having to quickly identify what will work and what won't. So there's these old adage stereotypes amongst people, but men and women, people from the US, people from the UK, people from India. And unfortunately, some of them still hold true. There's some value attached to it, but a lot of them don't. You know, there's a lot of them don't. And you have to overcome your personal biases. You have to somehow, there's a maturity element where you have to see, could you be friends with this person? Do you want to be friends with this person? That answer may not necessarily be yes, but can you help this person settle down and find their life partner? That question needs to be answered appropriately. So it's setting aside your personal biases. And it's quite easy when you speak to so many people and they open up to you. You know, you have to really stop yourself from judging anyone. And we're not here to judge anybody. We're simply here to deliver whatever it is their expectations are in a helpful sort of way. And once in a while you need to remind clients of ground reality, right? In their head, their X, their Y, they want X and Y, but we have to sort of ground them a little bit and be really pragmatic in terms of what could work. Correct. So it's a very diverse set of skills that I don't think that can be studied. It's a little bit on the job. Yeah. I mean, we've started thinking about sort of manuals that we give to our new hires and stuff, but a lot of it is osmosis, you know, seeing and learning.
I think that entire answer was coursework for a year, by the way. That was brilliant. That was unbelievable. But, you know, let's just get down to the whole thing. When you guys sat down and said, okay, now we have to kind of make a process, you know, we have to, you know, make this thing like a set of protocols that anyone who applies. So what is your process like? Because I've spoken to you earlier and I know it, and I think it's really interesting because it's not traditional. It's not conventional. So what is your process like?
The process was reverse engineered from the proposition. So we wanted to understand, what is our proposition? What are we offering that's new and that's relevant? What makes us different? And I think it came down to three basic things that stopped me from applying to one of the more traditional avenues of matrimonial sites. And the first one was this idea of who is this catering to? And I didn't want to, you know, coming back from abroad, and knowing a certain set of people, I knew I couldn't cater to mass India, right? So we needed to make this a little bit exclusive, right? Folks that, you know, that are like-minded, that have a good education, but they're sort of progressive, they're liberal, and you want to put a ring around, you want to sort of define your marketplace. So we have to make it a little exclusive. Correct. Now, if you make this exclusive and you're targeting, say, the upper strata of professionals and perhaps business owners in India, and particularly in the South Asian space, you have to make it discreet. So a lot of people who would never, I was going after the crowd that would never consider a matrimonial site. And I'm saying, we're not a matrimonial site. We're just where everything's offline. You're just simply coming online to share the experience, right? So we've enabled technology to increase reach, but not destroy the curation and the offline process. So those people, that brings us to the second feature of our proposition, which is around discretion. And we think by anonymizing your profile, you stand a better chance and you actually have a shot at meeting someone as opposed to, you know, stalking them online, finding everything about them, trying to find commonalities or trying to get their number. So we made it discreet. This does two things. One, it allows for people who would never consider this avenue to actually come online because they're comfortable. And two, when we do set up a match, they don't screw it up before they actually meet, right? Through their own interactions. I want everyone to get the benefit of doubt of who they really are in person. And I'm a true believer that you're your best self in real life. And then that kind of takes us to the final and probably most relevant in the Indian context feature of our proposition, which is around this idea of a pressure-free environment. A lot of liberal and progressive, self-claimed liberal and progressive families in India say, look, I'm not putting pressure on my child to get married. I actually let them turn down the first 1, 2, 3 matches. But that's all it is, right? The patience wears thin very, very quickly. So I have a theory, the fourth guy or the fourth girl people meet during an arranged marriage setting is very lucky because they've used up their 3 veto rights. They've used up their 3 rights to say no. And now their parents are like, boss, you know, I'm progressive, but there's limits. So
yeah, I think I think we're going to have to edit this out because my parents might listen to this podcast. So sorry, I won't interrupt you.
Yeah. So, but to be honest, I think that's the most compelling part of our proposition, which is this idea of a pressure-free environment. So now you've got a like-minded set of people who are anonymized and are comfortable on the trust factor. But most importantly, when they go on a date, all they know is the first name, the industry, and the age of the person. So for if any reason, if it doesn't work out, and enterprising a woman can walk away with very limited downside, right? Nothing has been shared. There's no reconciliation of WhatsApps. When two families set something up, there's so much pressure. It's so right. loaded, right? There's aunties and uncles and friends, and wow, they're meeting. And if you don't like the person, it turns out to be like a failure, it's an event. And we want to make the idea of, okay, that guy seems nice or that girl seems nice, but wasn't for me. We want to make that a non-event. So we brought the discretion element. So it's a long-winded answer, but this directly gives rise to the process. So we actually have created an application-based process. So folks from all over the world apply to be part of Surf Coffee. We then evaluate that application and we follow it up with an interview. So we interview every single person in person wherever possible, but if not, over VC. So we've been sort of COVID ready for a long time, if you will. And that interview facilitates kind of, it brings a face to the name, it brings a face to the application. We make sure if someone is divorced, we ask them to send her a divorce decree. If we have concerns about age, you're like, can you quickly flash your ID? So it serves as a little bit of a legitimacy exercise, but also it allows us to get to know them very well. And more importantly, it allows the client to ask us very specific questions. And the application and the interview allows us both to mutually ascertain whether this is going to work for them, right? Because it takes a certain kind of person. You know, you need to trust us. You need to be sort of open-minded. You need to, you know, be able to have a conversation for Surf Coffee to work for you. So that's the process we've built around. And then our matchmakers go about sending up matches most of the time in the same city, but sometimes around the world. And when we want to introduce you to someone that's sort of far away, we give you a pretty good reason to do so. And here's why things that work. And we've cultivated a little bit of an expertise in that, in this kind of cross-continental matchmaking proposition. We've turned out to be that we're quite good at it.
Correct. So Naina, I had a very important question to ask you because Sunil met his wife on Surf Coffee. Did he have to go through this entire process? Who interviewed him is what I want to know.
He did his own interview.
I met my wife under the premise of an interview. I'm like, look, let's meet. I was in the Middle East. I flew to Dubai, and where she was temporarily working. And I'm like, look, I'm flying in to interview you. And after the interview, I just asked her to dinner. So it was a gross abuse of company policy.
Wow. Sunil, interesting, your player.
Hey, you know, you have to fake it till you make it, till we get a staff, right?
It gives everyone a great, you know, comfort level also, right? Like, who are the people who are behind this? What are they doing? What are they up to? It's in fact, I think before, you know, setting someone up on a date, you have to get into a relationship with them first. As good or scary as that sounds, but that's what it actually is, right? You're working together for a long time and you just want someone to be on board 100%.
So what are the kind of questions that you ask them when someone comes to you? You know, what are the questions that you ask them? Like, for example, if I came to you and I kind of said, oh, you know, I want to be part of this, what are the questions that you generally ask?
So Vishal, I mean, the idea also, I mean, we think for the interview is not so formal, but to just actually have a casual chat, get to know you better, right? So there are basics that we all want to know. Where did they grow up? What are they like? What did they do? You know, what did they study? What has the life journey been like? Because, you know, we also work with people who are, you know, super dynamic and interesting. One thing that I really love about Surf Coffee is that we work on the non-traditional parameters of, you know, judging someone. When you're going through the traditional route, it's very important about, you know, how much money someone makes, where they studied, what's their last degree, are they a doctor or engineer? I mean, for some reason, that's not who you may be, and you may still be very happy and successful, right? So that metric is something, you know, these stereotypes are things we're trying to break all the time. We also really get into, I would call this the core value system. Your approach to life, your approach to your career, to family, to your partner, you know, what is it that, you know, and this may sound a little idealistic, but it really helps, right? Because you hear it from the horse's mouth, where they're actually talking about themselves and what they want to achieve. And of course, partner preferences. So, you know, we ask for a general age range. What locations are they looking at? Are they willing to relocate or not at all, right? Depending on circumstantial sort of situations. But I think this also allows us to dig deeper, right? Like one of the questions I love asking to really throw people off is, you know, imagine yourself outside of your work role or responsibilities, you know? So everyone's a hustler at work. The truth is, Vishal, we're living in that competitive world today, right? Where if you're terrible at your job, you're still, you know, you're kind of asked to go. So you could be very, very laid back on a Saturday morning and actually watch Netflix for 6 hours. But Monday to Friday, maybe, you know, that routine is on beast mode.
Yeah.
And so people really think, they're like, "Are yaar, what am I like? Right? What makes me me?" So if I was this person's best friend, what's a classic mannerism that that sort of, you know, I can resonate with? Also to like really pragmatic questions like, do you ever want to have kids? I think that's become a big thing now because I'm meeting much younger people who are very explicit on their stance, or they're like, I'm not, you know, this is something I can be okay with. Like maybe, you know, I'm a Gujarati who's open to people from different religions. That's totally cool with me. But if someone's very religious or extreme, that's not going to work. Right? So that tells you a lot, right? About how they function and what they're looking for. I mean, I know if in the first 10 minutes they start talking about, you know, who's at home and how close they are to their sister, you can just tell that they're family oriented. You don't need to ask that question. True. You know what I'm saying? You just get a sense.
So the only thing I'll add there, Vishal, is for some people, this is the first time they've had this conversation. And you can see, you can tell that someone's, no one's ever asked them this, right? Like, what do you want? And who are you looking for? So it's important that they have that conversation with someone at least once in their life out loud. And we facilitate that.
So I've had these conversations with people my age, and I'm 27 right now, and I've had these conversations about Indian matchmaking in general, and I've been very explicit about it when I've said that, you know, I've nothing against arranged marriage. The problem I had with the entire show was the fact that, you know, they bought these other preferences in, you know, which was listed down, you know, in front of you for everyone to see. On another hand, I think what you guys are doing is great, because you guys are trying to get into the psyche of the person and understand the person, you know, a lot closer. Have you ever had to reject people? And, you know, if you could share a story or two from there.
So I'll let Nana share the specifics, but we turned down probably, we used to turn down one in, I mean, again, coming back to my Sindhi roots, I find it terrible. The team is a lot stricter than I am. So we're turning down revenue all the time. But you used to turn down 1 in 3 people. And now that has sort of come down to 1 in 4 people. So anywhere between 33 to 25%. And that could be due to a number of reasons. I'll let Nana share like any anecdotes, but we've got to be able to stand behind this person. All right. So a common reason is they're sort of, they like this idea of being progressive and liberal and being open-minded, but they're not actually, they aren't actually. And you can flesh that out when they say, you know, so I'll get my mom to call you, or, you know, I get it, but can you share their birth time? And can you tell me what her father does? So that it becomes quite apparent that, you know, our model just may not suit them. The second reason is someone we just cannot establish a working relationship with, because if we're setting you on a blind date anywhere in the world, we have to stand behind you, right? We've got to be able to say this person is quality. And if we can't establish that rapport, if they're being cryptic or unlikely to give us the time of the day that is required, it's very much a partnership approach. We try not to take them on. And in the rare cases where we simply just cannot, you know, there's like a deviation between who they are and what they're looking for. There's like a perception issue. You know, if it's bound to fail, like doomed from the start, we cannot try to avoid that. We want to take on people that are inclined. So inclination is everything. They've got to be super keen to want to do this and have a little bit of an open mind. So taking those reasons all sort of together, we've had to, and that maintains the quality control of clients.
Correct.
I don't know, Nana can share some fun stories, yeah. I'm sure.
So it is, you know, like Vishal, I really believe that in order for us to do our best, right? We need to see that, like Sunil said, come from the person. You know, intent is everything. I think Surf Coffee, I always, you know, when people write to us and they're like, thank you so much, I would have never met my husband without you and all of that. You know, we choose not to take all the credit because I feel like you're an awesome person. All I had to do was put you in the right place, right time, and make it happen, right? Someone could live literally 5 lanes away from you in Andheri and you could not know. That is the fact, right? So I think someone who's not in the same emotional mind space, you know, you can sometimes tell, right? They're not serious or that they feel like they're ready, but you don't hear it, you know, as so much in their words. Also, matchability is important. Vishal, I rarely sort of come across people who are, you know, just not a good fit or super unpleasant or ill-tempered or anything like that. I think if sometimes they're hard to match, I don't want to waste their time.
Correct.
And I'm the kind of person on the team, at least, who calls a spade, right? So some people really love it because they're like, thank you for being honest. You know, no other... In India, there's this whole scenario of jugar, right? Which I'm sure you're familiar with, where you have traditional matchmakers who will call up parents and like, "Arey, aap aaiye to sahi, fir hum dekhte hain, ho jayega." You know, and I just to hear those kind of lines just pisses me off because I'm like, what are you talking about, man? Like, do you have people or not? Right? What is this ho jayega? Right? It's not, the stars don't need to be aligned. I need to have the right kind of people out there for me. So also someone who has maybe an Amazon shopping kind of approach, I don't think we're a good fit because that's actually a huge bone of contention. You know, people are so used to this fanning of biodatas. Right? It's like, my mom gave me 20 options. That's what she even does for my lunch every day. How can you introduce me to one person at one time? And I'm just like, well, it is what it is. So you can either go back to that or you can let someone else step in who has their expertise to help you out, right? And I hate to say this, but more or less, Vishal, we're right. You know, every time we've pushed a client to go out of their comfort zone or try something, they usually come back enlightened. They're like, I'm so glad I went on that date. Because it's something we don't do. We're too judgmental from bio data or Facebook profile or all those things, right?
So yeah, once in a while, you got to take a punt, right? We take a punt once in a while, and for the most part, it's worked out. So we convince a client to meet someone outside of their comfort zone. And the amount of times they've, you know, these like surprise weddings happen, it's been uncanny.
So I have a very important question for the both of you. Again, because we live in a highly patriarchal system, and we do, okay? How do you deal with mama's boys who come to you?
They don't come to us, Vishal.
we're kind of lucky, right?
We're for the outliers. We're for all the Marwaris who don't want to be vegetarian every Tuesday and not eat onion, garlic, and, you know, not... I mean, I'm telling you, these are...
You're going to have to edit that part out.
or, you know, the women who say, you know, I want a man to take care of me from, you know, start to finish, even though I make my money.
We just had an interview like that. We just had a very difficult conversation with an investment banker in Europe. I don't know if you can believe this, Vishal, who earned good money. She's from a small town in India, but kind of, you know, kudos to her. She's worked her way up and done well. But at the end of the conversation, we heard, after all, he's a man. And I don't care if I'm making money or not. It's his job to take care of me. So it's not just, you know, the traditional, it's not the weird expectation. Don't just come from the guys. Yes, absolutely. There's a natural proclivity for Indian men to have this mama's boys complex. So you're absolutely right. But it's not like the women are doing us any favors as well in some cases. So, but to answer your question, we just, the way to deal with this is, it's just avoid. But we've been lucky in that we don't attract them in the first place. They're like, what do you mean you can't share the photo What do you mean you can't tell me the weight? So that the conversation stops right there.
True.
Yeah.
So we just what are your thoughts? You know, one of the main terms that was used in a show like Indian Matchmaking was compromise, flexible, adjust. What are your thoughts on stuff like this?
So I think the premise of adjusting in a relationship holds. I don't think the premise of adjusting in your search necessarily holds. All right. Okay. So I think compromise and adjustment, you know, I'm married, Nana's married. The best of relationships go through strenuous times. And it's absolutely critical that you like your partner well enough to be able to degree with their to deal with their variations in subsequent years of marriage. So absolutely. I think our takeaway is, look, we try to help our clients and they have a laundry list of requirements, right? To me, adjustment translates to helping those clients reevaluate what is important and what isn't. Okay. So if someone doesn't want kids, I'm not going to tell them to adjust and have kids. I think that's terrible. Or if someone doesn't eat meat, to just go ahead and adjust and you start eating or you turn vegetarian. So I think the adjustment comes in. Are you really going to be that upset if your partner eats meat or is vegetarian? Is it going to be a deal breaker for you? The other aspect that I encourage a lot of people, particularly in the professional space, is around location or income bracket. Because, you know, if anything, coronavirus has taught us that life is short and it can change dramatically quite quickly. And this idea of being this side of worldly or earning this income bracket, maybe it's a balance sheet approach. It's a point in time. And is that what's going to make you happy in the long run? Or you may end up getting these things, but they're subject to change anyway. So to us, adjustment is around reevaluating your criteria to see what is actually important and what isn't. But to us, adjustment is really not about fundamentally changing who you are and getting married for the sake of a wedding, right? So are you chasing a marriage or are you chasing a wedding?
Correct. So one of the reasons why I love going on stage is because, you know, I get to interact with families and I get to be part of this family. And, you know, I think I've had over the last 4 or 5 years just amazing experiences in this wedding industry. So I want to ask the both of you, because you've been in operation for so long, which has been that one phenomenal story that you're superbly proud of?
There's so many, Visha. How do we?
Come on. There has to be one that is like your Mona Lisa.
I think there's been many. So I've actually attended some, you know, client weddings, which I think has been really humbling, because you show up there and then everyone introduces you like, "Arey, meet the person who made this happen, guys." And then you become a little celebrity, you know, where all the mummies will rush up to you. They're like, "Beta, can I have your card?" So it's been great. But I think there's been a bunch of them. Like recently we had a very... there was this beautiful love story that happened between like Bangalore and Lucknow, where you know, they were both, and I've never worked with someone from Lucknow, but she was actually someone I knew outside of Surf Coffee as well. So came on board, said, you know, "I've had my share of frogs that I've kissed and I'm really looking to hoping to meet someone." So we introduced them, and for him, he was the first person he met through Surf Coffee. So they started talking. And we got so excited. I don't know. I had this this radar, right, that was buzzing, where I actually said, you know, "Don't, you know, thank me if he becomes your future husband." And I never say that. I never say that because that's the worst thing to say to anybody. You know, they'll be like, "But tune to bola tha." So anyway, because she's a friend, I had that leeway, right? I had that rapport with her. And they the first time they spoke, it was an hour. So she called me and she's like, "Nana, what was that message, man? Like, so much hype." I said, "No problem. But, you know, what's next?" She's like, "Oh, we're due to speak again." The third day I get a phone call that, you know, we actually spoke from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Was the second conversation. It just went on and on and on. And we were just going crazy. It was amazing. So it so happened that they started meeting up in different cities. But this was like a real rom-com when... They planned to come to Bombay, and I don't know if you remember, Vishal, we had that day of freak rain in October last year, where 3 days it just rained incessantly and there was a red alert, just like there was 3 days ago, and Olas and Ubers were stopped. So these two show up at the airport and they can't leave the airport because, you know, there's no transport. So they spend the entire day, you know, having beers. They got lunch at those airport restaurants. You know, they window shopped. They pretended like, wow, I want to buy this new pair of trousers. And the next thing I know, in about 8 months, I get a phone call and I get a picture of a ring on the finger. So it was so sweet. And so, you know, it was a beautiful confluence of cultures as well, because they had the wedding at home. It was a Tambram and Sindhi wedding, which is literally like two states, right? From opposite ends, which kind of just goes to show that love is beyond all of this. You know, this, do you eat veg or non-veg? Where do you live? How much money you make? It's just, you need those other things, right? That determine how well you're a good fit for each other, rather than, I don't know, just that stuff we've been conditioned to think. So in many cases, it's just been these surprise weddings that's been, it's been beautiful.
Correct. I think it's such, it sounds like a Bollywood story only. I think you must be
like
having
the
like
Tom Hanks. It was like the terminal, right? Like you just show up and you're like, kahan jaao abhi? I'm at the airport for like 24 hours.
A terminal with someone else.
You know, when we started this music feature, there were a few people who doubted it and a few people who absolutely loved it. We've done three features so far and everyone's been loving the talent that's been here. Now, today we have an amazing singer. This guy is called Nimit Luharuka and he has his song called Alhada. You're going to love this song. Make sure to listen to it. Make sure to follow him on Instagram and just be ready to fall in love. This is Alhada.
Hi Vishal, this is Nimit Luharuka. The song Alhada is my first ever original. And it's really special to me because in spite of being my first song, I got very lucky that it got featured on Sony Mix and Sony Rocks last year under Artist of the Month and got a lot of love and has crossed more than 1 lakh views on YouTube. The word Alhada means unique, and the song says that being with you has made me unique. सच बनाया है आहिस्ता आहिस्ता होंगी ख्वाहिशें शाहिस्ता होंगी हम दोनों को मिलना था यहाँ थोड़े थोड़े हिस्से जोड़े सांसें एक दूजे की ओर तू मेरा मैं तेरा अब हम नवा मिल गया खुदा के मुझसे खुदा खुदी से मुझे कर गया वो आज
puri tarah. जाके रास्ता है रोशनी ने छुआ तेरी अब साफ आसमां है अब जीना मुनासिब होगा सब तेरे मुताबिक होगा ढूंढूंगा तुझी में अपना जहां जो भी है बराबर तेरा तेरा गम सरासर मेरा आ लिखे तेरी मेरी कहानियां मिल गया खुदा के मुझसे खुदा खुदी से मुझे कर गया वो आज पूरी तरह
I think you should maintain records because I think this is like a whole Bollywood script waiting to just be produced in your entire record book.
But we do. So that's exactly. So we've decided to like showcase our stories on our website now. So we only have four, but we're going to increase more. And they're very, very nice. I think, Nana, you had someone from South Africa and Australia. I mean, yeah. These are like the most unlikely of meetings. We even had a wedding during the lockdown. These two people mm-hmm. decided they wanted to spend lockdown together. So they went ahead and just got a civil wedding and got it done. Mm. In the US.
But tell me one thing, I'm very interested to know about this. That, I mean, where does your job stop?
So we're, Vishal, we sort of are around till the first date, right? Mm. So we facilitate, we would share a little bit about the person you're going to meet. Like Sunil said, it's very brief. It's literally four lines, but you know, that's how much we're trusted. So people go in. And then after that, we take feedback, which is a critical element of also matchmaking today. And I'm going to be very honest and say this. We all have five friends in our circle who are, you know, who are ghosted constantly by people they meet. Because of technology, there's no control on how much skin in the game you have. So if I went on a date with someone and I spent 2 hours with him, and then I came home and then I wanted to sleep over it and decide the next day that, okay, I'm going to see them again or I won't see them again. I'm pretty sure a millennial as of today will end up like blocking the person or just not responding. And I think that's terrible. It does tremendous damage to your self-esteem. You're like, are yaar, 2 ghante gaye. Like, it was amazing. What happened? What did I do wrong? That's where sort of Surf Coffee steps in, right? To sort of also give you perspective. Like, if we see patterns that you're having after your first date, like two people could go out and they're amazing. They're lovely people in their own right. But there's a tendency for XYZ to happen or someone had a tendency to show up late. It's kind of like causing friction, right? On your dates. Correct. It's not going well for you. Or someone sits to talk about, you know, their career for 45 minutes. It's like, you've come to hang out with me. I don't want to know how challenging banking is from Monday to Friday. It's just not required, right? So somewhere we've forgotten how to fall in love. We've forgotten how to charm people. It's all been about, this is who I am. This is who my, you know, this is what I do. And this name dropping. And that's very unattractive. So we step in till the first date. We share the results of, you know, did this person like you as well? And then we wave that green signal. And then you're left on your own, which is actually quite amazing because it feels organic. It feels like I was set up by a friend. That friend is Surf Coffee. And now I can meet this girl either six times a week, 6 times a month, or I can get married in 6 months, right? Correct. Who knows what's the right way to go about it?
The reason I asked you this also is because I think traditional matchmakers, because I've had friends who've gone to traditional matchmakers. And the thing is that they're involved right up till the engagement because, they, you know, in case there's a rift, in case there's something. So, you know, the reason I asked you this is, I mean, you might not be involved right up till there, but I'm just kind of wondering that in case there's a tiff, do you mediate? Do you kind of just, you know, calm down both people because you are the guys who made them meet, you know?
Can I jump in there, Nana, before you answer that question? Yeah. I think that comes down to, Vishal, what the deliverable is, right? The deliverable for the matchmaker is Shadi. I mean, in a multitude of levels. A, I don't think they get paid until the two actually get married. So there's a really financial incentive there. Two, that is the end goal, having a wedding, right? Mm. Whereas for us, that's not the end goal at all. For us, the end goal is to put you into a room, put you in an environment where you can meet a potential partner. On paper, you two are a good match, but we're never going to know if you like her nose, if he likes your hair, you know, whatever the case may be, and how you actually click. Correct. What there's that spark. It's not our job to light that spark for you. It's our job to put you in a setting where sparks can fly. Now, whether they do or they don't, you know, it's up to, again, it comes down to inclination. So I think that's the key difference. But I'll let Nana answer whether how we, having said that, once in a while, we have sort of, you know, mended fender benders and kind of misunderstandings. I think then I will have more context around that.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, it's not so much tiffs, Vishal, but our middle name is Oprah. So, you know, we are often asked for our advice, for what we think could work or not. So sometimes in a couple, right, there's no, it's not like they're having an argument or something's wrong, but they just want guidance. Right. So technically, even though it's not really our job, we sort of, they appreciate the fact that they trust you. They can have a chat. They, you know, they seek gyan, as to, so to speak. Right. And what do you think I should do? Do you think this is the right step? And I can always say one thing, that we never give advice in our best interest. It's always in the best interest of the member. And that's just a major thing there. Right. I don't think relationships can be forced. I don't think you can push people to get married or throw like a deadline, and you know, all, because a lot of these tips are centered around this stuff, right?
Correct.
Where I'm looking for commitment and he's just asking for more time. So, I mean, it's always like, you know, this is something that's so subjective and personal. Either you figure it out and you'll be very happy. So we've had those calls, you know, in different time zones where a client was feeling very emotional. And I think that's fine. But I also am of the belief that you need to figure stuff out for yourself. And true. I'll even, you know, probably sound controversial in saying this, but so many things that, you know, I don't know if, you know, you're aware, but we work with a lot of people who have been married before as well. And I am coming across a lot of people who are not even 30 and divorced. And it's become rampant, right? So the explanation for so many of these things just going sour is because there was no space, freedom, and time to get to know this person. There was only family pressure, right? Correct. And I would hate to be the person who coerced this individual to doing something, because that's just, the implications are multifold and they're just not worth it.
So it's very interesting that you said this, because, you know, when I kind of went through a little more data about Surf Coffee, I think you don't allow parental influence when, you know, you get two people to meet. Where did the thought from that come from?
From all Indian parents.
I think every parent thinks their child is the best thing since sliced cheese, right? So there are a couple of reasons. So they have this perception of their child that A, may or may not be true. Their child may be a smoker. Their child may not want children. And these are things that a lot of kids don't necessarily talk to about their parents, particularly in India. So mm-hmm. there's this disconnect between perception and reality. Second, mm-hmm. the pace at which, and again, the outcome that the parent is chasing is, again, a marriage. And the pace at which they want that delivered is, it's yesterday. So, and that's why it's just as there's a huge disconnect between, you know, how a parent approaches this and how someone who's actually the applicant. So that's why we don't talk to parents at all. We encourage our clients to keep their parents and family members fully up to date. I mean, after all, the ground reality is you're going on a blind date with someone you've never met. So it's important that you keep your loved ones aware of your movements and how the relationship is progressing. But we don't want to facilitate that. And I guess the last aspect of it is, having the client directly, having a direct loop, is it goes back to inclination, which is everything. This is a kind of, it's a two-way partnership between Surf Coffee and the and our client. And if we're dealing with the a parent who may be super keen with a not so keen applicant, it just creates more problems.
Correct. So, you know, we live in a very strange society, at least this is my view on something like this, is because we're constantly told to not interact with the opposite sex. Because for me, particularly, I was in a boys' college, a boys' school, and it's only when I passed out of degree is when I actually came out and I started working. And, you know, that's the chance I got to interact with the opposite sex. And it's not just the fact that I get to kind of talk to someone kind of gave me like a lot of insecurity, because I remember the first time I went on a vacation, I was traveling for the first time, I just couldn't talk to people, you know. And I know how I'm, you know, I hope you notice how I'm putting these personal stories, hopefully you take me in as an applicant.
But it's true, Vishal, there's no dating culture or interaction, right? Like, it's very different in like, you know, if someone is in Manhattan and you go to a bar and you see a person that you want to talk to, the confidence and inclination to do that is there. But, you know, if you do something like that in Bombay, she'll turn around and say, oh, you know, my brother's at the next table. So we just, you know, that's not been part of our culture. There's been sheltering, there's been protection. And that's why all the more, you know, dating is educational. You can't
But that same girl, when she goes home that evening, her mom's saying, why aren't you married yet? Right. So there's this dichotomy, right? There's this hypocrisy. And, you know, my take on it, it's kind of sad. So in your case, I think that's you got away easy, right? It's actually the delta between kind of growing up and then suddenly interacting with the opposite sex in our in our society. It's given rise to some pretty unhealthy and unhelpful views of the opposite sex for each other. Right. And there's a lot of surprises. So that's where the gap came in, and that's why Surf Coffee came about, to sort of bridge that gap a little bit. So we'll retain the marriage outlook, but we'll do so in a dating sort of way. So, you know, you don't have to have your first conversation, Vishal, after getting married, right?
Yeah, I do want to add here, Vishal, that I think there's a wonderful change happening as well. You know, I have received like LinkedIn messages from parents who are concerned about their kids. In fact, we started working with someone in London who was in her, you know, late 20s. When we asked her, how did you hear about Surf Coffee? She said, oh, my friend told me about it because her dad's using your service. So what? I think that, and he's 55. So that's actually a true story.
Which is pretty cool, right? So that's just
amazing.
Something that we relish in.
This gap is kind of changing now. Parents are so understanding. They're like, I've told my daughter, there's no pressure. You know, you talk to Nena, she'll speak to you. Like, I'm having this kind of conversation rather than when can we match horoscopes. I think there's an Indian parent that's very cognizant that their kid is not, you know, what it was like 30 years ago. They want to be supportive. They want to be their friend, so that, you know, you're actually closer to finding your partner than rebelling and doing something really stupid, right? Mm.
So the reason I kind of asked about the whole insecurity bit by talking to the opposite sex is because I think the concept of blind dates is a little, you know, iffy you know, and you guys are introducing it or have been kind of conducting it in a for a while now. So what are like the pros and cons of blind dates in the Indian context?
In terms of pros, there's complete non-bias, right? When you walk in, right? So I think we all operate like that, Vishal. We see something, we read something, we think we know it all, right? I've been guilty of this very early on in my career when I would see an application and be like, "Acha, ye to aisa hoga." Then you sit down, you spend 30 minutes with this person. It's like peeling the layers of an onion. And you're just like, oh my God, this person's freaking amazing. Right? So I think that's the thing, that pictures are not reflective of who we look like. In fact, pictures on any medium, even the apps, right? They're very, you'll always have a friend complaining about how this person didn't look like that at all. Because they're filtered, they're Photoshopped, they're from 10 years ago when someone had a head full of hair. So that's the reality. I also think the beauty of in-person interaction is something that we dismiss greatly. Again, COVID has been a huge reminder about that. We all crave human interaction. And while Zoom is great, are you telling me Zoom's the same as, you know, meeting up, you know, with your friend for a coffee? Absolutely not, right? It's eye contact, body language, it's the flirtation, the sense of humor, the letting the evening have its own sort of direction, right? Instead of controlling everything. And I think there are people who don't do blind dates because they want a huge degree of control. So when you swipe right or swipe left, you feel powerful because you think, oh, I have the right to sort of accept or reject this person, right? Whereas on Serve Coffee, we're taking it away. We're taking away your ability to micromanage anything. You show up, we pick the venue. It's usually a nice one. You meet a very interesting, amazing person, and you go home, you know, thinking, man, that was pretty cool. You know, there's an old world charm / mystery to just meeting someone who's actually pretty great and not, you know, a serial killer.
So two things from this. Firstly, you know, I think it's great that you brought up that whole picture thing because I think face reading or showing a picture to a face reader was something where I put the TV off and said, I cannot allow someone to look at my picture.
I think that was a defining moment for many people. Like, you have that TK, but this is a whole new level boss, as they say.
Also, we've been in this conversation for, you know, close to an hour now, and my producer just sent me a message saying, I am sold. Please tell them I'm applying. So, well. So, but I have to ask you guys, you know, we're reaching the, you know, the latter half of this interview right now. And I wanted to kind of ask you, what is the difference then? Because you sit right in the middle of dating and traditional matchmaking. So what is the difference between you and Tinder?
Well, I think we're fundamentally different though. I think the reason for which we exist, right? I think we talked about this earlier, the fact that you can say yes and no on a very, very superficial level just by a photo, which may or may not be legitimate in the first place. So it gives rise to a failure, right? So I think Tinder to me is a numbers game. You just keep going at it, and then one day it will work out for you, maybe, right? Koi bulawa bhatkawa person will swipe right too. All right.
So you mean to say Deepika Padukone did not match with me? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm sure she matched with you. I'm talking about for others, right? I think Deepika Padukone with the Y here instead of an E at the end of her name. So there, I think in terms of Tinder, the nature of the relationship you're seeking, I think there's a superficial element to how they go about it. And as a result, you'll probably end up with a superficial or casual relationship. So props to Tinder. It wasn't around when I was kind of in this space, but I'm sure a lot of young people, if they're seeking a particular nature of interaction, it's likely to deliver that. So that's one. So we exist to develop a committed long-term relationship, whereas Tinder to me approaches something, you know, let's see how it goes, right? As opposed to thinking about long-term.
Correct.
We also then, we go away from the focus on quantity. So this is not about swiping and swiping over and over again. We want to introduce you to 1, 2, 3, you know, less than a handful of relationships that have a high degree of probability in terms of you know, striking a match, a where both parties feel like, ah, this is great. I want to see them again. So it's that quantity over quality sort of play that differs us. And finally, there's the legitimacy element. Again, I talked about this earlier. You don't know who's behind the other side of the phone. In the Surf Coffee, you can argue, yes, you don't know also, but at least you have someone in between to cover the high-off details. At least we can tell you the guy is a guy. You know, for example, right? We can tell you he really is a guy. He really is 35. He really is in Bombay, or he really is in New York. Now, we can't tell you whether, you know, is he a VP or is he an assistant VP or a senior VP? And nor do we think does that matter. And we don't get into that details. But, you know, there is a base case of security that that we delivered to. So all our clients are busy. They're not, you know, they don't subscribe to this sort of swipe left, swipe right, and they don't have the time to do so either. So we're catering to us, you know, you graduate from Tinder maybe onto something else and onto something else. We attract two types of people, as I talked about earlier. A, they offline, they wouldn't give any of these other online avenues a shot. And that's when we convince them to use Surf Coffee, because the only thing we do online is reach you. Everything else takes place offline. Or on the other end of the spectrum, we are, you know, the final frontier. I've tried Tinder, I've tried Shadi, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've tried Match, and none of it's worked out for me. I need something new. So this is it, right? You're my last hope. So these are sort of clients we attract.
Yeah. Correct. Also, Vishal, we provide a very balanced gender ratio, right? That's not on the apps. It's actually one woman for every 10 guys. And these are real stats, right? There's a report that came out that even the most progressive pro-female kind of apps don't enjoy more than 25 to 30% of female users. And I think there's many reasons, right? There's lack of trust. There's no time. And one of the main, I would say the fundamental difference, Vishal, is human perspective. If I met someone on Hinge and I have relationship troubles, who can I talk to about it? Who can I ask about the guy, right?
True.
Is this, there's no perspective. But if you go to a Surf Coffee, someone will tell you, you're a great person, but listen, don't you think you're being a little stuck up about this part? And that compels me to think. I go home. You know, I mean, we asked people about the kids thing chapter, right, which I brought up earlier. Someone just sent me an email today saying, Nena, I've spent 22 hours since you sent me that email thinking about it. And my answer is undecided. So, you know, it's just you need a person sometimes just to help you with reasoning. And I don't think artificial intelligence or algorithms are there yet. You know, we're not living in Black Mirror just yet.
So I have to ask you like another business question, because this entire conversation has just blown my mind. How do you choose your team that works with you?
Very carefully. There's only a handful of us. So now we're at, I think, 5 or 6. And we have views to double that in the next 12 to 18 months. I like to take, you know, the staff on the team, I don't think by coincidence, it's mostly women. I think just me and Nick who are guys. I think they're just able to, we need to be, they're able to draw that trust and rapport. We've had folks from different industries. So no one has come from a match, as you said, matchmaking university, matchmaking background. I look for a transferable set of skills that, you know, there's a bit of commercial acumen. There's, you know, the ability to be, presentational. You're the face of the brand, right? And your first interaction with us will, you know, create the first impression. And just someone with like they themselves have to have a modern outlook on life, right? They have to have, they have to be well spoken. They have to be articulate, and they have to be willing to listen. So, can you listen to other people as opposed to just, you know, place value judgments and whatnot. So we do a multi-round interviews. Anyone we hire speaks to everyone in the team. We do sort of a capability-based interview. You simulate an interview or a disgruntled client. How would you respond to them? And things like that. So slowly but steadily is the answer. And, you know, if for your listeners, we are hiring. So if you think... if you think you'd like to come on, then by all means, reach out to us. It's not all roses. You know, you're listening to a lot of people's problems. There's a, you know, there's a certain, because of the clientele, we attract such an accomplished clientele, there's a certain degree of arrogance that comes along with it. So to be able to withstand that, it's not always the easiest thing.
So in a corporate structure like this, because, you know, it's not a traditional industry, what is your designation like? Chief matchmaking officer?
Yeah, that's exactly what I've got on my card. You know, as I founded the concept in the company, but ultimately it's the chief matchmaking officer. That's her existence. You know, Nana runs the show as a co-founder and general manager. We have someone looking after international markets. We have someone dedicated. We have a couple of people dedicated to simply client servicing. So this is not just about onboarding and getting as many clients. Remember, all these like stellar profiles that come on board and get admitted to Serve Coffee and become our clients, then they're looking for stellar value as well.
Yeah. So Vishal, we hired someone from, you know, an investment bank who thought, you know, things would be more chilled out at this kind of place. And she's like, oh my God, this is like next level intensity, you know? So it's just that, because there's things happening all the time. I think in general, like companies like these are great to sort of hone all your skills, right? And not just in one direction. Like you may be analytically or academically very, very intelligent, but to be have a high EQ is equally important, right? Or to be able to think on your feet, or like Sunil said, to be able to disassociate and, you know, just be patient and calm and listen to somebody. So these are all things that you're not taught at B school, unfortunately.
So I have my last two questions for this fantastic interview. And, you know, thank you so much for kind of coming on this. One, this question was actually really important that I thought I'm going to ask you right now. What's the view for the future? What are you planning to do for the future? Are you planning to also look into same-sex marriages? What are you kind of doing, you know,
for the time being? We'd like to focus on just expanding your geographic footprint. So we already cater to, so all our clients are of Indian origin, regardless of nationality, religion, community, and all of that stuff. So everyone has some Indian connection, because we claim to have subject matter expertise in that space. We understand, you know, we have some historical context, around the Indian communities in different parts of the world. We've dramatically increased our intake, in terms of single parents, folks that are divorced, and catering to a wide background. We're not quite there with the symbol, you know, the LGBTQ community, but that is a consideration. We've brainstormed this idea a fair bit, but I think it'll require an incremental skill set that we don't have. So we need to acquire that skill set. We need to learn more about this space, because it is loaded. It's not just about being LGBTQ. It's LGBTQ within the Indian context India and overseas. So that's certainly on our minds. But for the most part, our view is around geographic expansion. So right now, today, we're focusing obviously heavily in India, the US, UK, Hong Kong, Singapore, wherever they see us, we are. But there are people all over the world. There's Indians all over the world that still have not yet heard about us. And I'd like to, especially, you know, ironically, Serve Coffee was conceived for the NRI in mind, folks like myself, but we've been a super duper hit actually within India, right? Because I think the proposition is very compelling to a woman in a, say, smaller town. So if you're in Hyderabad or, you know, Ahmedabad, and if we present you with a Serve Coffee proposition, meeting a guy that's been vetted, that is serious about marriage and the ability to walk away if you don't like him, that is a very compelling story. They're like, what? I can do that? I didn't know this concept existed, right?
Correct.
So we've been particularly successful in India. So for me, it's you know, I'd like to establish a bigger office here in London, grow our offices in Dubai and Bombay, and continue to serve clients with greater reach.
And my final question, because this has been, I think, an amazing, amazing, amazing interview. And thanks to Netflix for kind of putting this into perspective for me. This is a twofold question. Firstly, where do I apply for a job? And secondly, as an applicant?
Well, Troy, we've got a brand new website, and hopefully the brand new website that we soft launched a few weeks ago will cater to both your aspirations, though. But by all means, it's been a pleasure speaking to you as well, Vishal, and thanks for the opportunity for having, you know, sharing our messaging and our views on your show. It's been great talking to you, and you know, as you said, the Netflix show has really helped us frame conversation. It's increased mind share on this general topic. Correct. There's a general theme around matchmaking that suddenly becomes salient on everyone's minds. But it also, it reminded us on why we got into this business in the first place and why are we different, right? We look at some of the kind of characters on the show and that's exactly that we think, that's someone we can help and that's someone we probably could not help. And it sort of reminds us of this unique space that we occupy.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. This has been unbelievable. I hope you guys have had fun. Where can people reach you, you know, in terms of social media?
So we're on Instagram. Our handle is Surf Coffee. So it's pretty easy to find. We're also on Facebook. We're on LinkedIn. And our website is great. So www.surfcoffee.com. Our email address is info@surfcoffee.com. So someone will get back to you if you write to us on any of these mediums.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. This has been so amazing. And I can't wait to see you guys once this lockdown is over. Thank you so much. So I'm recording the end of this episode and also logging on to Surf Coffee at the same time. So you can understand how amazing this interview was. I really, really hope you've liked Sunil and Naina on this episode and it's given you a little more perspective on the business of Indian matchmaking. More importantly, please make sure to follow them on Surf Coffee. Make sure to follow me on the VR family. Don't forget, follow me on the VR family. And make sure to catch all the episodes of Behind the Shaadi on all your favorite streaming platforms. This is Behind the Shaadi.